It's almost like we should be doing this on Wattage Wednesday, but kind of too important. When you start talking about what's going on weather-wise out there, the topic that always comes up is climate change. Well, okay, climate change. And they keep having these different summits, and we've got an individual who's making a difference when it comes to actual boots on the ground with the oil and gas industry, and that's the Well Done Foundation. Of course, we've talked to Curtis Shuck in the past, but joining us, the chairman of the board of the Well Done Foundation, Jeff Gordon Creed. Not that Jeff Gordon, different Jeff Gordon. Jeff Gordon Creed joining us in the program. Jeff, thanks for coming on today.
Hey, thanks. Really appreciate you guys having us on. I'm looking forward to talking to you.
Well, COP27 just took place. We'll get to that a little bit later. But for those that don't know, explain to us what the Well Done Foundation is. Curtis Shuck, of course, one of his brainchilds, friend of the program, came up with, we have an issue with orphaned wells. So first of all, define an orphan well for our listeners this morning.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so first of all, the Well Done Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit, and our mission is to plug methane leaking oil and gas wells, particularly orphan wells. So orphan wells are wells that have been drilled in the past and have essentially been abandoned and no longer have any viable owner that anybody can turn to plug and cap the well. So there are probably 2 or 3 million of these orphan wells in the United States. Many of them are leaking significant amounts of methane. And so our mission is to, one, highlight that issue, and two, actually just get boots on the ground and go plug them.
And it was kind of something that got, I guess, overlooked. When we're looking at the carbon sequestration, things that North Dakota is way ahead of, compared to a lot of other states, but the orphan wells and leaking methane and some of the toxins to the environment that were coming out of some of those wells, it was kind of out of sight, out of mind for a long time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I mean, everybody's known about it, and you know the regulators in the various states have known about it, but they're really, you know, there just hasn't been enough attention paid, and there hasn't been enough sort of regulatory environment around it, or money for the states that end up stuck with these wells to actually get them plugged. I remember talking to a regulator once in one of the states, and it was a state that at the time I was operating a small oil and gas company there, and we had a bunch of wells, and I was talking to the regulator there because we were aware of this problem. And he's like, yep, well, we have about $30 million to plug these orphan wells, and it's about a $300 million problem. So a bit of a gap there.
So when we're talking about orphan wells, you know, we'll go back to when the Well Done Foundation started back, and I think it was 2019, maybe, yeah, 2018 at the tail end there. The Crude Life, we've been there since day one, and very, very happy to help with any way we can with the cause. First off, when did you join the Well Done Foundation? And second, there's been quite an increase of orphan wells since the Well Done Foundation has started. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can. So I came to the issue sort of the same way that Curtis did. You know, we were both in the industry, and we, you know, both saw that this was an issue. We had sort of the separate but same ideas from different sides of the country. Well, you know, he was in Montana, but I'm in California, and we talked and realized that we essentially had the same idea. So I said, you know, hey, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. Let me join you and help you in this cause. So that's how I came to it. And that was just a little bit over a year ago.
Okay.
Where I joined Curtis. And so we're sort of, you know, rowing the boat together. On the issue of an increase in the number of orphan wells, there hasn't really been an increase. It's just that they have been more formally recognized. And because there's more money flowing to the states to actually specifically plug orphan wells, the states have been making more effort to actually get abandoned wells onto the orphan well list. So the wells were doing what they were doing. They were just either abandoned and sitting there, and now they're actually getting onto the list because folks understand that they need to get on the list so you can get money to get them plugged.
What I found interesting was kind of the perception, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when Curtis and I and, you know, others, even in the state of Texas with the Railroad Commission, but the wells out in Ohio seemed to be the imagery that a lot of people had, which was, you know, nobody knew about it. You know, one day you went out to shovel in your garden and pretty soon a methane leak came out or some buildings were built next to it. And all of a sudden, you know, there's these, wood remains from a derrick back at the turn of the century. A lot of the orphan wells now are a little bit different, aren't they? Than that visual is of the, you know, kind of the nobody knows lost child thing.
And it sort of depends on geography, right? So, you know, in some places they're easier to spot, and the way the fields are laid out, you know, the wells will be drilled in a field and, you know, it'll be somewhere like out in Montana or, you know, say down, in the Central Valley here in California. And, you know, so they're just easier to see, right? You're not in forested land like the Cuyahoga National Forest or, you know, the hills of West Virginia. And so it just sort of depends on the geography, but, you know, they are everywhere, especially in oil producing states like, you know, Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, obviously, you know, Texas, Montana, North Dakota as well. But, they come in all shapes and sizes. You know, some of them are, you know, out in the middle of a river because the river moved since the well was, you know, drilled back at the turn of the last century. Mm-hmm. Some of them are in areas that used to be rural and agricultural, but now have been, you know, developed into suburban land. And so, you know, for example, your Ohio example, you know, we plugged one. The well was literally sitting in the courtyard of a Section 8 senior low-income housing project in downtown Cleveland.
That's a little crazy. I do want to ask you, though, when we come back from the break, as far as what you're seeing on kind of that snapshot, if you take a window in time on the age of some of these wells, and if there was something that you're seeing about when they were developed a little bit more. I'd like to get into that when we come back. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. I'm Steve Bach and your host, along with Jason Spies, my co-host. You can catch The Crude Life each and every Sunday morning right here on Super Talk 1270, 10 a.m. Sunday mornings. This hour of the program brought to you by Benchmark Mortgage. Give Joe Sheehan a call. Use your mortgage planner at 701-400-3926, as well as Dvorak Motors, Big Boy, and Hit Inc. on Super Talk 1270.
Welcome back to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
You're tuned to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. I'm your host, Steve Bogdan, along with Jason Spies from The Crude Life. Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. You can catch The Crude Life right here on Super Talk 1270. This hour of the program brought to you by Benchmark Mortgage. Give Joe Sheehan a call. He is your mortgage planner, 701-400-3926. As well as Dvorak Motors, where your family for a lifetime. Big Boy, just get in line, it moves fast. Hit Inc., independent signature, respect Hit Inc. This is Talk of the Town on a thoughtful Thursday on Super Talk 1270. With us on the program, Jeff Gordon Creed. He's with the Well Done Foundation, plugging orphan wells. He's the chairman of the board for that foundation. Of course, our friend Curtis Shuck, one of his many projects. I got this up and running to plug orphan wells and make a difference. And the question I was thinking before we hit the break, Jeff, is do you see, as you're going across the country and examining different locations where there's orphan wells, and do you see areas that is popping up more from the production practices at the time or how things were remediated at the time? So if you're going through that snapshot, the late 1800s or the turn of the century or the 1920s versus the 1930s, do you see a pattern where there's more of a problem? And it comes from the production side, because that's just the way they did business back then. And maybe didn't have some different thoughts of what you do at the end of life for a well, whether it's kind of the timestamp of going through these different oil plays, whether it was Pennsylvania or Ohio or North Dakota or Colorado or Texas, Louisiana, some of the things you're seeing, can you put like a date stamp on that where you're like, okay, this well comes from 1910 and yet we know there's a problem here because all wells from 1910 usually are an issue? Or is it from a state-by-state perspective? Break that down for us.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. First, let me just say, Curtis is the chairman.
I'm sorry.
Well done. I'm the director of development and operations. But yeah, it's a great question. So the wells span the gamut. But to your point, absolutely. You know, a lot. You know, so many of the wells that you see, especially back, you know, in Ohio, Pennsylvania, which were literally drilled at the turn of the last century. You know, those wells were drilled. They weren't huge wells, you know, so they were from relatively shallow formations. And so they weren't productive for that long. So if the well is drilled at the turn of the last century, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s, and then was plugged, you know, 15, 20 years later, the folks who were operating those wells at the time, they were doing the best they could, right? They knew what they knew. And so oftentimes, you know, and they had the technology that they had. So, you know, we'll find wells that we plug in Pennsylvania or Ohio that will have wooden casing. So, you know, that's not great.
Right.
And obviously, you know, if there's methane below it and pressure, that's going to leak out because wooden casing just doesn't keep it in. Also, you know, we'll find wells where they just didn't have, you know, robust thoughts or plugging practices at the time. So oftentimes they would just throw, you know, a bunch of fire clay down the casing hole, you know, a couple rocks, you know, maybe a telephone pole, some boots, whatever you had, an axle. We found that, you know, down there, just whatever, and, you know, cover it up and call it a day. They, you know, folks just didn't know any better. So you see a lot of that in areas like Pennsylvania or Ohio. There's another category. So, you know, wells that were drilled later in time where the technology was better, in fields that were more developed. But what happens oftentimes in those fields where they had the technology to properly plug them is that these wells get sort of passed on, right? So they'll get first drilled by a big outfit where the well is robust, and then they'll get passed on to a smaller operator when they become less economically viable. And then perhaps they might even get passed on to another, even smaller operator who thinks that, you know, I can make a buck on this well because oil prices or gas prices are high. And they do for a while, but they really don't have the economic means to, you know, properly produce them or properly plug them. And then sometimes those folks end up going bankrupt or disappearing off the face of the earth. And then suddenly that well ends up being abandoned or shut in or orphaned. The equipment, the well equipment, the wellhead equipment gets taken off, the well gets ignored, and then it starts to leak. So that happens as well. And that's often not a downhole problem. It's often, you know, a surface problem.
Yeah, the reason I brought that up is because you come back to North Dakota and you take a look at the wells that you guys have worked on here. It seems like a little bit of a different scenario because ours were developed a little bit later, different practices, but you're not running into them in urban areas like you mentioned in Ohio, in situations like that. But they're more, well, we forgot it was there. It more of a, oops, it got overlooked. Is that what you run into more in North Dakota compared to some of these other plays?
Yeah, there and in Montana as well. And, you know, the way that comes up often, it's a sort of a quirk of the regulatory environment, is that, you know, if you have, say, you're a small operator and you have a field of wells, if once that well becomes economically unviable for you, then you legally have an obligation to plug the well. But oftentimes these folks don't have the money to plug them. The bonding requirements are such that, you know, there's not enough bond money behind it to plug, you know, the 10 wells they have because the bonding requirement is low. So what the operators will do is they'll just shut the well in for a while and call it shut in and tell the state that the well is shut in, when in fact, for all intents and purposes, it's abandoned. You know, so we'll find wells that are, you know, technically shut in, where all of the wellhead equipment has been stripped off it. There's a piece of plywood over the top of the casing, and there's a heavy rock on top of the plywood, and that's shut in. Well,
I've seen that.
That's my uncle's company. Yeah. Yeah, my uncle does
that. Right. So, you know, it's like, well, yeah, I suppose it's shut in a way, but not really. So, you know, so that happens. And you know, those wells can also leak a significant amount of methane. And so, you know, we just have to get to it and plug them.
Well, that's one of the things. Oh, so go, sorry. Oh,
I was just going to add, I've seen situations where you wind up, okay, there was a piece of plywood over that wellhead and then one big rock. And what tends to happen in North Dakota is you're picking rocks out in the farming and ranching fields. And you wind up, oh, well, there's already a rock there. Let's start putting more rocks. And you wind up, well, that's the field rock pile. But what's under that rock pile? Well, there's a wellhead there or the casing. So,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know,
then it gets forgot about.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, it's, you know, in other places, you know, so in North Dakota or, you know, Montana, they're kind of easier to stumble across oftentimes because they're in places where folks farm, you know, in Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, you know, or Louisiana, where it's either, you know, way back in the swamp. You know, we'll often get approached or, you know, the regulators will call us and say, hey, a hunter was out there and I heard this hissing noise. You know, and thought it was, you know, not a snake. It sounded different and, you know, goes over and there's a, you know, lo and behold, out in the middle of nowhere is, you know, a wellhead and it's, you know, it's just pouring, you know, pouring gas out and or leaking oil oftentimes.
One of the things I want to talk about when we come back after the news break at the bottom of the hour here is why this is relevant to everybody listening, because now we're starting to use taxpayer dollars to plug a lot of these orphan wells across the country. And we're starting to, you know, get into even some political stuff, Jeff, that, you know, we don't want you to get into. But because of the word regulatory came up,
yep,
you automatically get into politicalness. And, you know, Steve, your example of kind of the history behind it to where, yeah, a lot of rock piles you see are old orphan wells that nobody knows about because of that reason, where somebody just put a rock on it to start with. And pretty soon the kids come out and do the picking rocks, you know, to start the agriculture season off. And one kid throws the rock on there. Pretty soon you got a rock pile. That's a real thing. And so the history behind that's really important. I was going to ask you before we go to the break quick, have you, and we want to get into the COP27, because that's where, of course, the regulation and the tax dollars and the direction for a lot of this is going. But I got to know, have you found any abandoned orphan wells with a bunch of three-wheelers in them?
No,
I've heard rumors where that's how they got rid of a lot of those three-wheelers. Where they just
I won't be surprised if I do.
That Atari, what was that? ET Atari cassettes. That was the other one that people
found all kinds of parts of cars down there. That's for sure.
Oh, there's a Pinto. Look at that.
When we come back from the break, we'll finish up that part of the discussion. Then we will get into the COP27, the climate change summit, just took place in Egypt. We're talking with Jeff Gordon Creed along with Jason Spies. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Talk of the Town. News, talk, and sports for Bismarck Mandan. Super Talk 1270. Talk of the Town, brought to you by Benchmark Mortgage. Call Joe Sheehan, your mortgage planner, at 701-400-3926. Dvorak Motors, we're your family for a lifetime. Big Boy, just get in line. It moves fast. HIT Inc. Independence, dignity, respect. HIT Inc.
You're tuned to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. Good morning, my friends. Happy Thursday morning. I'm Steve Bach along with Jason Spies on this thoughtful Thursday. Joe Sheehan coming up at the top of the hour. This hour, we're talking with Jeff Gordon Creed, Director of Development and Operations for the Well Done Foundation. Of course, our friend Curtis Shuck, one of his ventures with the Well Done Foundation. We're talking with Jason Spies, of course. You can catch The Crude Life each and every Sunday morning on Super Talk 1270 at 10 a.m. And Jason, wanted to give you an opportunity to finish up your question. By the way, if you do find a three-wheeler, if you do find a three-wheeler down a hole, it'd be kind of cool to have. So let me know if you find one, okay?
I can't tell you how many accidents I've gotten on three-wheelers. I mean, emergency rooms had one of those.
Oh, yeah, 12, horribly dangerous.
12 stamps, you get a free one from me. Yeah, it was something else.
Hey, I used to ride in the back of pickup trucks and drink out of the garden hose. If I could make it through that. And the three-wheeler escapades back in the day, you know, we used to be a little tougher back then as kids. I'm just saying.
I had one, and I turned that thing over so many times I can't even count.
We all
I'm serious. People don't understand how dangerous those three-wheelers were, man. And looking back at it, I am so surprised I was alive. I mean, because I went through a garage door because we flipped off it. Otherwise, I was going to go through the back of a gremlin. And I'm talking about the car, not the Mogwai after midnight. So a couple things, actually, I wanted to just bring up quick is number one is kind of the evolution of this orphan well and abandoned well, because when Curtis first started, him and I, we talk about this, how it was a for-profit deal. He wanted to go on the merit of it and everything else. And well, he found out the marketplace really, you know, what wasn't supporting that. And so he ended up going the nonprofit route, but there was a market for that. However, he's kept saying, hey, we're not going to take tax dollars. And honestly, I don't know if he's take tax dollars to this point. I think the last interview we did, he still hasn't. And he wears that like a badge of honor, the conservative he is. But at the same time, he's not putting his head in the sand and saying the reality with ESG, the reality with nonprofits being funded by the government now in so many different areas. Talk to me a little bit about the ESG movement with the orphan wells, the Well Done Foundation, you know, the taxpayer responsibility in there, because that's when it becomes a little bit of a sticky wicket. And I would imagine that's part of what you talked about this past week at the COP27 summit. Is that correct?
Yeah. So that was a lot of sort of questions packed in one, but let me try to unpack it there for you.
Yeah, I had to have a little context there, but yeah.
no problem. So yeah, so we don't take tax government money for plugging our wells. And Curtis's thinking on getting this enterprise started was the same as mine, which was, if the trick here is there are a bunch of these wells out there. They are putting methane into the air. As everybody knows, methane is 84 times as bad as CO2 as a global warming gas. So if you can reduce the methane, you are getting a tremendous return on your investment because you get a huge bang for your buck, just to put it bluntly. So, you know, you can plug a well. You can stop a bunch of global warming gas going into the atmosphere for pretty cheap in relative terms. So when you look at it, how do you bring the money to this issue? Well, what we're doing at the Well Done Foundation is we're doing it in partnership with folks. So the industry, you know, the industry understands that this is a problem. And, you know, there are many, many good actors in the industry who understand that, like, hey, you know, this is something that we should all work together to clean up. The industry doesn't want to be a bad actor and have methane spewing wells out there. So, you know, we'll get money from industry and they will help us plug these wells. We'll get money from philanthropists and they will help us plug these wells. And hopefully, and then we get money from the landowners on whose land these wells sit, because oftentimes they just want to get rid of this problem. It's causing environmental degradation. It's causing all kinds of, you know, issues. It's stopping them from being able to farm their land. So, you know, we get money that way.
we're also trying to attach to the enterprise a sort of a carbon credit scheme. So if we plug a well, we'll take X amount of methane. We do a tremendous job of measuring and monitoring, so we know exactly how much methane is coming out of the well over the period of time. Then we can, you know, we can do that conversion to CO2e, and then that's CO2 equivalent. And then we'll know how many thousands of metric tons of CO2 we've stopped from going into the environment. And then hopefully at some point that will turn into a carbon credit that we can then sell. And then we can then take the money that we get from that carbon credit and go plug more wells. And it becomes this virtuous circle cycle. On the issue of your question about, you know, sort of tax dollars and, you know, how money should be used in this space, you know, it's our position that you can't get a better return on your investment in reducing carbon in the atmosphere than what we do. It's, you know, it's first of all, it's binary. So you know exactly how much carbon you're stopping going into the air, you know, or how much methane you're stopping it going into the air. And the price is relatively cheap. It's a lot cheaper to plug one well than it is to grow, you know, 500 acres of trees that you then need to allow to grow to 45 feet tall and hope that they don't burn down in the meantime. So the reducing methane and taking methane out of the atmosphere is considered, in our view, and I think many people's views, the low-hanging fruit.
We're talking with Jeff Gordon Creed, Director of Development and Operations with the Well Done Foundation. When we come back from the break, Jeffrey, I want to talk a little bit about the COP27, the Climate Change Summit, and how your project is received in those circles. This is Talk of the Town on Supertalk 1270. I'm Steve Bakken, your host, along with Jason Spies from The Crude Life. Catch The Crude Life each and every Sunday morning, 10 a.m. right here on Supertalk 1270. This hour of the program brought to you by Benchmark Mortgage. Give Joe Sheehan a call. Use your mortgage planner at 701-400-3926, as well as Big Boy. Just get in line. It moves fast. Hit Inc. Independence, dignity, respect. Hit Inc. And Dvorak Motors, where your family for a lifetime, on Supertalk 1270.
Talk 1270. Welcome back to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
You're tuned to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. This is Talk of the Town on a thoughtful Thursday. This hour of the program brought to you by Benchmark Mortgage. Give Joe Sheehan a call. He's your mortgage planner. We'll talk to him coming up at the 10 o'clock hour. Also brought to you by Big Boy. Just get in line. It moves fast. Hit Inc. Independence, dignity, respect. Hit Inc. And Dvorak Motors, where you're family for a lifetime. I'm Steve Bakken, along with Jason Spies from The Crude Life. Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. right here on Super Talk 1270. And we're talking with Jeffrey Gordon Creed. He is the Director of Development and Operations at the Well Done Foundation. And they function in the world at kind of a space that was forgotten about, of plugging orphan wells that were forgotten about, and what that means to society. Just coming off of the COP27 Climate Change Summit in Egypt, you were there, had an opportunity to listen to a lot of different perspectives. When you're looking at what actually moves the needle versus political agendas, and we get in that all the time, what is the reception for projects like yours? And then what's the tone of a summit like that? Is it about the traditional energy? Because I refuse to call them fossil fuels anymore. Is traditional energy sources just the devil? And there's a different perspective? Or are projects like yours embraced? And there is a place for that when you're looking at climate change summits.
And this is the third summit I've been to. And, you know, I guess the short answer is the work we do, reducing methane, mitigating methane, is incredibly well received at the COP. I think just because the understanding is that you have to approach climate change from, you know, many, many different avenues, right? You have to, you know, plant trees. You have to stop methane from going into the air. You have to reduce, you know, consumption. You have to have, better practices. You know, all there's just a million different things you can do and have to do. But I think the perception and the understanding is that methane, if you can reduce, in at least in the short term, reduce the emissions of methane, you get a huge bang for your buck, just because methane is such a powerful greenhouse gas. So when we were at the COP this time, I had the opportunity to present on a panel. I presented on the issue of the work we were doing mitigating methane. There were a couple other folks on the panel who were presenting on mitigating other, you know, serious greenhouse gases, which, you know, are, you know, 1,000 times as bad as CO2 in the atmosphere. And those, that work we do and how we do the work is really, really well received, because, you know, not only do we stop methane from going into the atmosphere and reduce that greenhouse gas, but we also, there's all kinds of co-benefits, right? So we're creating jobs by doing this work. We're creating jobs, good jobs, for folks in the oil patch who traditionally, you know, worked on, rehabbing wells or drilling wells. And so we're providing employment there. We're doing, you know, stopping, you know, not only the methane from going in, but we're also, we reclaim every well we plug, we reclaim around the well site. So we're stopping all of this environmental degradation. You know, we're doing this work oftentimes in places where people are already under stress. So there's sort of we're embraced from a sort of a environmental justice perspective. You know, often, like, I don't know if we were on break, but we plugged a well in downtown Cleveland, Ohio, which was in the middle of Section 8 low-income housing, senior housing project. So that's good, we think. So, yeah, we're well received.
So what's next for the Well Done Foundation? Now, you just got back from the COP27, and is there momentum after that, or is that just kind of a briefing session on your part, and now it's, you know, back to Texas to go stop some of the leaks down there?
You know, so we have tremendous momentum. Curtis is, you know, pretty inspiring in his presentation, and he's a great connector. So we have tremendous momentum. We're getting great press coverage for the work we're doing. And so what we are in a phase where we are scaling up, and we're plugging wells now in 13 different states. We're looking to move into a bunch of other states. We're getting, you know, we're doing measuring and monitoring all kinds of places. We're talking to, you know, regulators and legislators to help them understand how to best incentivize this work and incentivize the work in the right way rather than the wrong way. You know, we're bringing kids into this thing. So we're bringing, youth, and folks who are sort of interested in this work, and explaining to them sort of the issues and the righteousness of reducing these methane emissions. So we've got great momentum, and we're just, you know, we're just carrying on. And, you know, as Curtis says, you know, we just go keep plugging wells one at a time.
So, Jeffrey, you're up against the break, but if people want to find out more about the Well Done Foundation or those in the industry or people that want to get involved, how do they do that?
They should go to our website. It is the welldonefoundation.org, welldonefoundation, all one word, .org. We've got a ton of information on there. You can support us. You can look at the projects. We've got it broken down state by state. We've got a lot of information there about, about methane and the benefits of reducing methane. So, that's where you should find the information.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning. Jason, thank you as well. Jeffrey, thanks for coming on today.
Hey, thanks. It's been a real pleasure. Nice chatting with you guys. I hope we can do it again.